This program does not create an attorney-client relationship between Moss and Barnett, a professional association, or any attorney appearing on this program and any caller or listener. Please remember that we can only give general information, and every case is unique. Always check with your individual attorney for any specific legal concerns. If you are in need of specific legal advice or are looking for an attorney, please do not hesitate to give Moss and Barnett a call at 612-877-5000.
This is WCCO's Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett.
It is a lovely Saturday, and it's officially autumn. Thanks so much for joining us on Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. Tom Schroyer is our host on the program today, and one of our regulars is back on the program today.
Steve, we're welcoming back David Beek, a patent lawyer with Moss and Barnett, who's been on our program now seven or eight times. We lose count, and always talking about patent law, trade secrets, and intellectual property, as that is David's main focal point in the practice of law for his career. He's a registered patent attorney with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. And we have exciting news to talk about today, Steve. It's the passage and the enactment into law just last week when it was signed by President Obama of the American Inventors Act. David, this is the first overhaul in patent law in some 60 years.
Yes, Tom. It's the largest major overhaul in the last 60 years, going back to 1952, the last time something like this happened. So this is very significant.
How long has this been in the works?
Well, this has been in the works, I would say, for the last couple years in different incarnations. Some of the things didn't make it into the final bill. Some new things that hadn't really been talked about did make it into the final bill. The point is that it's hoped that this is going to streamline the process for getting patent applications through the patent office, and it's going to encourage more challenges to the validity of patents to occur at the patent office, where you've got trained examiners to hear those cases instead of our courts in general, where you've got judges and juries who aren't trained in patent law.
Now, hold on. I heard a number of politicians talking about this law, and they said the purpose of the law was to increase the number of jobs in America. I didn't hear you mention that.
Well, you know, we would like to think that the entire world revolves around patent law and more particularly patent attorneys. I think we're a little more modest than that. Certainly, innovation in the United States is going to drive jobs, and to the extent that getting more patent protection within viable time frames and costs is going to assist in that process, it'll have an indirect effect.
Well, sure. And as you've mentioned on prior appearances, we are in a knowledge-based economy, and so much of our capital, our wealth, really, in this country is tied up in intangibles, intellectual property, patents, copyrights, and trademarks. You mentioned Microsoft, for example, with a tremendous amount of its market capital value in intellectual property.
Right, correct. I remember a number where of their, you know, $50 or $60 billion in market cap, their actual bricks and mortar type asset was something like $500 million. So they're an extreme example.
How big of an issue is it, though, to streamline the processing of patent applications here in America?
Well, there's a great opportunity to do it. Just a couple statistics to provide context. Right now, there is a backlog of 1.2 million patent applications pending at the patent office. 700,000 of those are waiting their first examination. So that's a lot of applications covering presumably a lot of wonderful inventions that are waiting to have their day in the sun with the patent office examiner.
Well, exactly right. I mean, who's to say which of those? Hopefully many of them are game changers, lifesavers, and productivity enhancers, and would really provide tremendous competitive advantages to American businesses. And yet there are 1.2 million applications just sitting there. Of those, how many have yet to even be examined?
Well, that's the 700,000.
Okay.
So 700,000 haven't even started the examination process yet. The other, 500,000 have are in the midst of examination.
Now, what are some of the issues around why those haven't been examined more quickly? That seems like a tremendous backlog.
Well, one of the issues, and this is, I think, one of the real positive effects of this new law, is it's going to end what is called diversion of patent office funding. There are user fees that are collected by the patent office for everything from filing patent applications to steps during the process of having the applications examined to maintenance fees that are paid periodically to keep issued patents in force. Now, one would think that these user fees, because they're collected for patent activities, would be used by for patent activities. Unfortunately, that's not the case. Going back to the Clinton administration in the 1990s, a significant chunk of this money was diverted for other domestic programs like National Public Radio, low-income housing under HUD programs, things that may have been worthy in their own right but had absolutely nothing to do with the patent process and patent holders who are paying those fees.
Sort of like taking the gas tax we pay for highway funding and spending it on something other than building highways.
Right, like mass transit. You can have arguments about the value of mass transit, but should it necessarily be built using highway funds?
Sure. So, now, this new law ends that.
Right. At least theoretically, it's going to end it. Instead of having those monies put into just the general treasury to be appropriated, they're going to be put into a special patent office fund. And so even if they don't get appropriated within 1 year, supposedly they're not going to be spent on other things. Now, the hope is then that the patent office will have all of this money to hire more examiners because they've been in kind of a perpetual hurry-up mode to hire more examiners to make up for the shortfall that they had during the Clinton administration. Unfortunately, you know, this isn't like hiring retail sales clerks at Target where there's a very large population of well-qualified people. You're talking about having to find people with good science and engineering backgrounds who are willing to work at the patent office. And so it takes time to identify, hire, and train these people. And then, of course, you know, they leave along the way. So retention has been another issue. So I think this is an exciting, positive development because if it provides more money to the patent office to increase the size, the training, the retained and accumulated expertise of those examiners, that can only be good for the patent process.
Dave, there has to be concern, though, that with this backlog, that patents or patent applications wouldn't get a fair shake, that they might be not getting the time they deserve. Is that a concern on your part?
Well, yes, in a way. And what actually has happened, I think, has been kind of the opposite. Typically in the past, and I've been at this for about 24 years, a patent application would go through a prior art search by the examiner, and then he or she would examine that application two times, and then the patent would issue or it would just be dead as a doornail. I found in recent years that examiners are kind of so afraid to allow patents to issue because they may be then ridiculed after the fact for allowing an invalid patent to issue, that I've had cases where they conduct 4, 5 different prior art searches. They require 6, 7, 8 rounds of examination. And so it really winds up stretching out the process over a much longer time period than it used to take.
Well, how long does it take then for an average patent, let's say, to make it through the patent office and be issued?
Well, because of this backlog, we typically are seeing for a chemical or a mechanical type of invention, electrical, that it waits about 2 years to be examined, and then things move after that, and overall we could see it getting issued within, let's say, 3, 3.5 years after it's originally filed. Now, business method patent applications are a different story. There's such a backlog of those. It may take 4 years for those to receive their first examination, and then it may take several years after that to issue.
David Beek joining us in studio. Tom Schroyer is our host on the program. In the spotlight today, the America Invents Act. It was just enacted. We'll have much more on this. It is 1117. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett.
This is Sidebar on Minnesota Law.
You can't handle the truth.
Excuse me, Your Honor. Two youths.
Are you sure this is legal?
You think you know every trick in the book, and they come up with another one.
Moss and Barnett, excellence in the community. Did you know every year Moss and Barnett awards the Paul Van Valkenburg Award for distinguished community service to one of its employees? Past winners include Tom Keller, Chuck Parsons, Connie Schofield, Adrian Summerfield, Kevin Bush, and Cheryl Riggs.
Minnesota Law is presented by Moss and Barnett and returns in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO.
It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, Saturdays between 11 and noon. For more info on today's program and all our programs, go online, the website, moss-barnett.com. Tom Schroyer joined by David Beek, patent law in the spotlight. Again, fascinating program today, and a brand new law on the books.
Just signed last week, Steve, the American Inventors Act. It is a represents a sea change on many, many levels of American patent law, the first real overhauling or rekeeling of the law in over 60 years, and still very much a work in process, Dave Beek, as the Patent Office has to flesh out how some of these procedures are going to be actually made operational.
That's right. You know, Congress will pass these laws that are fairly high level, high elevation in their wording, and then they leave it to the Patent Office to fill in the gaps with their rules. So we're going to be looking in the next year, year and a half for a lot of rules to come out to tell us exactly how these new laws are going to work.
One of the more interesting wrinkles that will be ironed out by the rule-setting process has to do with a new procedure that's been adopted that I understand makes our American patent laws conform better or more congruent with the international patenting systems, and that is to provide an administrative process within the Patent Office itself for third parties to come in and actually challenge a patent after it's been issued rather than having to go to court, which is very expensive.
That's right. And you know, I think this is maybe the best thing that is coming out of this law. They're calling it post-grant review. It, we think, is going to be really an opposition-type proceeding like what the European Patent Office has had for years and years, where once a patent issues, an interested competitor or other party can file a petition within
anyone in the world.
Anyone in the world within 9 months to bring prior art and arguments to the Patent Office's attention for why that issued patent is invalid, should not have been issued.
Quickly, let's just define for our audience what is prior art, because we use that term a lot in the patenting process and in later litigation.
Well, that's right, and just in a very general sense, prior art is all the things that that existed in the industry in the field before the invention that were there to be used. So it could be other people's patented ideas. It could be journal publications. It could be public knowledge, actual products that were commercialized within the industry. Those are all things that were already out there. And therefore, someone can't come along and say, I want to patent that because it's already there in the public domain.
After all, to get a patent, you have to have an idea that's new, that's inventive.
Right. And you know, the patent examiners, they try to do the best job they can, but there will inevitably be some number, some percentage of issued patents that really are invalid. And so the idea here is to provide a quick and easy forum to have these kinds of highly technical arguments heard and decided at the patent office instead of over the course of a five-year litigation, which has tremendous amounts of cost. And I've gone through this process in Europe about five times in my career, so I do have some experience with it. It's really a pretty efficient process. The parties have an opportunity to file written papers with their arguments. Then typically there's a one-day hearing where you go and you make your arguments orally in front of a three-examiner panel, and honest to goodness, you have an oral decision by the end of that afternoon before you leave the hearing.
Now that was in Germany, though. They are pretty efficient over there.
Right, but I wouldn't put anything past our efficiency and ingenuity here in the United States either.
Amen.
So the point is, this is an opportunity to have these highly technical issues heard by trained, experienced examiners at the patent office without all of the costs and all the delay associated with litigation. Now, don't get me wrong. There will still be reasons to have patents litigated. Maybe it's part of an infringement claim overall. Maybe it's an invalidity issue where the challenging party needs to take some discovery to get some facts and some documents from the patent holder to try to back up their case. But for a lot of cases where you're relying upon publicly available prior art, there really is no need to wait for and pay all the costs for that litigation-type form to be able to challenge the patent.
Well, sure. Most, I think, observers agree that an average cost to litigate a patent claim, just a single claim within a patent case, is about $1 million in attorney's fees and expert costs, because they are so very complicated and involved, and there are so many different hoops to go through. So this really could streamline the process of making sure we have issued valid patents and that they're not subject to challenge nearly as much later on down the road, but it still doesn't mean lawsuits will be over.
Correct. And you know, let me go back to a point I made just before our break. These examiners that I am seeing who are kind of almost afraid to allow patents to be issued because they're afraid they might have gotten it wrong. If you provide them through this opposition proceeding a safety valve, if you will, by allowing the patent office to get it right the second time, maybe this will actually encourage some of our examiners to pop out patents that they think are patentable a little faster, and that would also reduce the time frame.
We have more on the way. Tom Schroyer hosting David Beek today, the America Invents Act. Patent law in the spotlight on the program today. By the way, if you have a question for David, feel free to call the program. The phone number is 651-989-9226. Toll free, 1-866-989-9226. Texas studio as well. The number there, 81807. That's 81807, and that is powered by Home Service Plus, an offering of CenterPoint Energy. We have more on the way. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, each and every Saturday between 11 and noon. Here on News Radio, 830-WCCO. Welcome back. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. Great program today. David Beek in studio. Tom Schroyer is our host. The America Invents Act. We're talking patent law on the program today. And Dave, we were talking a little bit during the break about this, and it, circle back around. At the end of the day, the goal is to keep this thing moving, because I can't get over that backlog. It just doesn't seem possible over the course of the next 10 years that they'll be able to get caught up. That has to be a concern about how do they get this backlog cleaned up, if you will.
Well, you know, the only thing that's really going to do it is going to be getting more examiners hired and trained who are able to then turn over more cases overall, and providing those examiners the knowledge and the confidence to be able to do their job. And, of course, part of it also, part of the responsibility falls on us as patent attorneys to do a good job of explaining to the examiner why the inventor's invention is really great and why it really represents a significant improvement over that prior art we talked about, so that a patent is or should be rewarded.
Another perhaps plug going in here for young people to go into engineering and technical science areas to get the background to perhaps someday become a patent examiner, because it really is a field that could be opening up.
That's right, and I've found it to be very rewarding in my years of practice.
Now, one of the, of course, the new law is getting a lot of attention, but one of the biggest points on the marquee for this is the idea that we are now switching from giving patents for the first person who invented a new idea or product to someone who is the first to file for a patent application. That's a huge change, isn't it, Dave?
This really is a big change. I think our system, going back to the first original Patent Act in 1789, has awarded the patent to the person who had the first invention date. And this was really done as a matter of fairness. What's more fair than giving it to the person who was the first to come up with that idea or invention? Now, that does require, in instances where two people are trying to patent and claim the same thing, to figure out who was the first to invent. And we have had for years and years something called an interference proceeding at the patent office, where they would allow parties to provide proof of their invention dates, and therefore they would figure out who was the first to invent. Now, statistically, and I actually looked into this, based on the typical 500,000 patent applications filed each year, the number of those applications that actually found themselves in one of these interference proceedings averaged around 200 a year. So this actually is statistically a very, very small number of these incidences of interference proceedings. But this change, this very significant change to all of our inventors out there, has been justified on eliminating the need for these costly and time-consuming interference proceedings. So once this kicks into effect, whoever gets to the patent office door first to file an application for that idea will be the one who will get that patent.
Now, does this also put us into a better alignment with international patent laws, foreign patent laws?
It will, for the most part. And that was the other justification used by the administration, was harmonizing the U.S. with the wishes and the customs of the rest of the world. Now, I might add, the rest of the world tends to give it to whoever was the first to file purely. So if you have an invention, you disclose it to me, I take it from you, I run off to the patent office door first. In a lot of other countries, I would just win.
Even though you stole it from me.
Even though I stole it from you. Our United States Constitution actually requires that the patent be awarded to an inventor. So we're not going to have a pure first to file. It's going to be first inventor to file, they call it. But what it is going to do is it's really going to provide a lot of incentive to inventors to file lots of applications earlier so that they can get those earlier filing dates, so they don't all of a sudden lose out if someone else gets to the patent office door first.
That sounds like a major change in how inventors and their attorneys are going to want to approach whether or when, rather, to file for a new patent.
Well, it is. This is really going to provide a sea change in the way patents are handled to protect clients' inventions. Typically in the past, you know, an inventor would do some work, come up with an invention, then he would reduce it to practice to test it to see if it works technically. Then he would go off into the marketplace to talk to some people to figure out if it would be likely to win out commercially, might talk to some investors. Then he would at that point have enough confidence to file his application. And of course, he would file a pretty good and comprehensive application, because he would know a lot of things to put in that application at that point. Now,
running a huge risk not to file during all
of
that.
Well, it is, because it's very possible that by that point it may just simply be too late. And so I think inventors are going to have to start thinking about filing earlier, which also means all the more having a qualified patent attorney who not only understands that invention, how it presently might be practiced, but how it might change and be practiced differently in the future, and also really understanding the business plan for that inventor to put together a patent that is going to mesh with the strategy of that inventor's business. So really, inventors start thinking now about who's that qualified patent attorney who really would make not only someone good at writing an application for you, but also kind of a good knowledge strategy partner, if you will.
We have more on the way. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. Tom Schroer hosting David Beek once again in the spotlight. The America Invents Act And by the way, we're here each and every Saturday between 11 and noon. If you have a question or comment for Dave or Tom today, feel free to call the program, 651-989-9226, toll free, 1-866-989-9226. You can text the studio as well at 81807. That is 81807, and that is powered by Home Service Plus, an offering of Center Point Energy.
This is Sidebar on Minnesota Law.
You can't handle the truth.
Excuse me, Your Honor. Two youths.
Are you sure this is legal?
You think you know every trick in the book, and they come up with another one.
Moss and Barnett, the best of the best. Did you know Moss and Barnett attorneys are recognized for excellence by confidential surveys of their peers in the bar as best lawyers in America, Chambers USA, or super lawyers, or rising stars? Attorneys from Moss and Barnett are admitted to the bars in 10 states and practice before federal and state courts throughout all of the United States.
Minnesota Law is presented by Moss and Barnett and returns in a moment on News Radio 830 WCCO.
It is Minnesota Law presented by Moss and Barnett. To learn more about today's program and all our programs, including podcasts, go online, moss-barnett.com. Tom Schroer hosting David Beek. Once again, the America Invents Act in the spotlight today, Tom.
Yes, this brand new law, just in effect for a little over a week, 1 week now, is still confounding attorneys in the patent bar. Unfortunately, we have David Beek here, who has studied the law and is able to provide as much insight as can be offered about it. And David, one of the things we're talking about here is how the new law has made some really major changes in how patent lawyers and their clients are protected and being forced to deal with some of the issues that surround patent law, including the question of when someone's patent really is or shouldn't have been issued or should be invalidated because somebody else had the idea first and didn't get a patent. And that's called the rule of prior art.
Right, right. So, you know, we talked before about this prior art being other people's patents, other people's scientific journal articles, actual products that were available, commercialized in the industry. That's kind of the whole foundation, if you will, that you invent from, and you can't go back and patent. And one of the really significant characteristics of U.S. patent law in the past was that inventors were given a one-year grace period to file and not have their own activities act as prior art against them. So that could be public disclosures they made of their inventions at a trade show. It could be them actually testing out their invention in kind of a public-type setting. It could be them actually offering their product for sale. And as long as they filed within 1 year, that wasn't prior art, and a lot of people would actually wait that 1 year in order to know more about their invention before they filed. Now, under this new law, the only exception carve-out for the inventor is going to be a public disclosure that was made by him or her in the previous year, or I think his employer. You won't anymore be able to wait that 1 year after your offer for sale, after your public testing, after you're otherwise making your invention known in some manner. And again, this is really going to militate filing applications at an earlier stage in time so that you don't find out it's too late to file.
So taking another tack on this, though, if I'm an inventor and I let's say I have an invention I'm putting together in my garage and I keep the front door down and I keep it locked and I put newspapers on the window so nobody can see it and I do a good job of keeping it secret. And then one day I hire Dave Beek and I have an application prepared and filed with the patent office. Am I still vulnerable to having that invalidated if somebody else just happens to pop up at a trade show or put some kind of a blog on the internet that discloses my idea? Can that invalidate my patent if somebody else publicizes the same idea?
Well, certainly if that person publicized it before we actually file that application. I want to make sure I'm understanding
right.
Your hypothetical here.
Yep.
And so this is always the unknown. And again, this is another area where there's going to be a major change here. Under the previous law, that prior art had to have an effective date that was prior to our client's invention date or was more than a year before our client's filing date. And so there was kind of a safe harbor window, if you will, that could save the inventor. Under the new law, that's being swept away, and any prior art that has an effective date before the new inventor's actual filing date is going to have an immediate effect.
So it would seem to me that it's hugely risky for an inventor to sit on an idea or an invention for very long, because you never know when somebody on the other side of the planet is going to pop up and post on the internet the same idea and therefore invalidate the invention you've been working so hard on.
Right. Most definitely. Most definitely. And that's why I don't want to sound like a broken record here, but the new rule is going to be file early and file often so that you minimize the risk of someone else having some prior art that has an effective date just before you actually file.
We're going to take a break. We'll come back one more time. Once again, David Beek in studio. The America Invents Act. Tom Schroyer is our host. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, each and every Saturday between 11 and noon, here on News Radio 830-WCCO. Welcome back one more time. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. A very interesting program today. David Beek, Tom Schroyer, the America Invents Act. And our time's gone very quickly, as always, Tom.
Thanks, Steve. We wanted to make sure before we have to break for the show at the top of the hour that we get out one really big point that has turned what used to be common knowledge among inventors, it seemed, into now a modern myth of patent law.
Well, and it really is a potential trap, and that's this widely understood rule that the inventor could wait a year to file his or her patent application after a commercial offer for sale, an actual sale, a public use. That's going to be gone. So, inventors need to understand that so that they don't wait and get to their patent lawyer when it's too late to act.
Well, in fact, it is gone, effective immediately, isn't it?
Well, no. This particular rule is going to get phased in over an 18-month period.
All right.
So there is going to be a little bit of a cushion, but probably better overall to start thinking about sooner, because 18 months will be gone before we know it.
And maybe very quickly, we only have a minute left, if you could just give a brief explanation of why it's so important now for, under this new law, for inventors to really find a really qualified patent lawyer to work with very early in the process, along with them as they're making their invention.
Well, we talked about the value of the patent is going to really be commensurate with the job the attorney does to describe the invention, claim the invention, and tie it back to the strategic business plan of the inventor. So not any attorney is going to do. You get more value if you have an attorney who really is working more closely with you and your ideas. And this is also going to be important as an inventor goes and works with other parties, even under a confidentiality agreement, because there's always going to be this risk that that other party may take that idea and run off to the patent office and file first. And even though there may be a proceeding to try to prove up that that was actually a stolen idea, that's a very, very messy proposition, expensive proposition to go through. Better to firm up and file before you talk to that other party.
And so inventors are really almost betwixt and between. If they file too soon, they may leave some of the benefits of their invention on the table because it doesn't find its way into the patent application, and therefore they can't claim it later, or they don't get to claim it later, somebody else does. Or if they wait too long, some other prior art pops up, or perhaps somebody else actually files first a patent for the same thing, and they're out of luck.
Right. And so there's a balance here, and a good patent attorney is going to be able to achieve that right balance.
Well, Dave, always great to see you. And as usual, we learned a lot on the program today, the America Invents Act. Thanks again, Dave. Tom, next week on the program, another great topic.
Exactly, Steve. We'll have Matthew Meyer returning to talk about the employment for returning military veterans under the ESGR program. Matthew Meyer returns to our show. He's been on multiple occasions. Matthew, a former Marine Staff Sergeant, and is very active in this movement to make sure that our returning service people are welcome back with jobs, as we know how hard that is for anybody, but especially veterans, to find employment these days.
That is next Saturday between 11 and noon. For more, go online. Moss-Barnett.com. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett, here on News Radio 830 WCCO.